The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Runes, the 2018 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2018. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Well, welcome again to the Leaders Day pre-conference. I'm excited to be at the conference again this year. One of the things that happens, I think, for all of us is it's a time of a lot of vision, a lot of inspiration, motivation for what we do. We don't lack vision in the classical school movement. We have a lot of that. Sometimes the difficulty is moving from that vision to reality and seeing the things happen in our schools that we want to see. And so that's what I'm going to be talking about today. My name is Keith Nix. I serve as the head of school. I'm in my ninth year at the head of school at Veritas School in Richmond, Virginia. Before that, I was the head of school in Birmingham, Alabama at the Westminster School at Oak Mountain. Before that, I was on the board of that school. I'm a converted business person to educational leader. I don't call myself an educator per se. It's too lofty of a title for me. I'm a facilitator of education. But what I've learned a lot running schools at a board level and then at a head level for the last 20 years and growing classical Christian schools and helping us take that beautiful vision we have for classical Christian education and really that leading to mature school. Today I want to be talking about one of the things that has helped me do that in a very practical way more than anything else. And so we're going to spend a few minutes talking about what strategy and strategic leadership really is. As well as some of the other functions that the leadership of a school has, especially the board, because strategic planning and strategic leadership is a combination effort between the head and the board. It's where they live in that, and in a couple of other areas as well that we'll talk about. But we're going to be talking about what it really means, what role strategy plays, and then we're going to talk about in a very practical way keys to good strategic planning. Because what most of, I've probably had the same experience that many of you have had of a real rocky relationship, an unsatisfying relationship with strategic plans or planning over the years. You've probably all been a part of those day-long brainstorming sessions where it feels like it's very exciting. You get a lot of things on paper, and then a year later, 2 years later, where is that? You know, we paid a consultant some money to come in and give us this thing, but it just never became the useful tool. A lot of times I look at strategic plans and I can tell this is not going to be a helpful tool in achieving its purpose. And I've been through all of that. I've been through bad strategic planning. I've been through writing plans that sit on a shelf. But over the last 5 years, I mean five strategic planning cycles in my two different schools, honing a process that I found to be truly helpful. The reason I named the title Strategic Planning that really works, is the idea that two things I'm trying to accomplish. Coming up with a plan that really is a good tool, and so the planning process worked because you have a good plan. Secondly, I'm going to talk about how that plan is used to achieve four or five critical functions for the board and for the head of school. What the part that plan plays in a lot of the right activities and right action. So working in two ways and having a good plan and that plan actually being this really central tool to everything you do in terms of school leadership. So that's going to be the goal. After we talk about some keys to good strategic planning, we will talk about how to actively use a strategic plan to improve board meetings, clarify the head of school accountability and support and evaluation, to keep the board organized, productive, and effective. The strategic plan, for me, has become the thing that keeps the board doing all the right things, the head accountable and supported in all the right ways, and together aligned in a way that your time together really is about strategic long-term leadership in the most important parts of our job. So let's start with understanding the three board modes. Boards chiefly are charged with growing, creating the environment to grow a school, or to grow an organization. And by the way, strategic planning, let me back up just a second. When we're talking about strategic planning, I think different processes work for different kinds of organizations. And like so many things, I find that schools are just unique. It's a unique mix of stakeholders. It's a unique, even board governance. It's a different kind of thing. So part of what I would advocate today, I have no idea how well it would work in a different setting than a school. So I'm advocating strategic planning in the school setting. And strategy, defining strategy is really just the plan of action, the how we're going to get to some major ideal or goal or accomplishment, some major overall goal. So like I said earlier, we don't lack in vision. I think we have a good idea of knowing where we want to be. So it's putting that plan together that gets us there. And so there is, so the board and the head together are responsible for that kind of a plan. Certainly other stakeholders feed into that in different stages of your school in different ways. But let's talk about these three modes. Generative, that's the part, those are the kinds of activities we talk about when we're thinking about growing a school. So a board and a head together, and I'll just start saying the board instead of saying board and head together, because the board properly functioning, the head is a part of that board. It doesn't vote, but the board, which includes the head, thinks about generative activity. How do we grow the school? How do we grow to a point where these goals of maturity and stability and accomplishment of mission really happen? Then there's the fiduciary side, and lots of times we strictly think about the financial side of fiduciary, but fiduciary is really that guarding activity. The board is trusted with something really important. And then the Latin word fiduciary means trust. That's where it comes from. And so there's this big trust. That's the guardrails. That's the, are we healthy financially? Are we prudent? Are we responsible? Not only on finances, but with the mission of the school and the vision of the school, are we guarding that? So there's that guarding and growing nature that every board needs to be about. I think strategy is how you do both of those things. So you're thinking strategically. As a board, you're putting a plan to grow and a plan to guard. So that's the language and framework, the language we'll be using today when we talk about strategy in relation to the other things. We are going to get into some things beyond just strategic planning that involve the life of the board and the life of the head as well. So there'll be some board and head training, if you will, parts of this presentation, but the base is this strategic planning process, how the board and the head work together to come up with a plan and to use that plan actively to be productive and to be healthy. So defining strategic, again, a plan of action to accomplish a major or overall objective. When you think of strategic, I've looked at 2 or 3 strategic plans recently, and one of them had just a list of everything they wanted to do in every area of the school, and it was like 6 or 7 pages. Right? It's a nice document, but it won't be a tool that you can use. I've seen strategic plans that just look like a brainstorm wish list with no actual plan of action how to get there. And we're really talking about strategy in terms of a clear plan to accomplish a major goal or objective, not just incremental growth. When we're thinking of strategic initiatives or ideas or objectives, you're coming up with those few things that you think move the organization and move the vision forward in a significant way, not just incremental growth. Like, it wouldn't be strategic to say, we want to grow our student body by X percent. I have no idea how you did. If you want to create an initiative within your admissions department that builds relationships with local pre-K schools, that's a strategic thing. But just to say that you want to grow or to list in a degree that you want to grow by is not a strategic plan. It's not a strategic activity. So we're talking about key steps, action items that move the whole thing forward. So you want to identify opportunities, needs, and challenges. So for an example, at our school, we've said all along that we want to be a school for families. And early on when we were small, we were losing too many students out of a family, keeping their family, but they had one student that was struggling academically and couldn't stay in the school. And we were losing too many of those kinds of students. So we identified a critical opportunity. If we're going to be a school for families, we have to develop some sort of academic support program or school within a school. And so that was a major objective we listed that was in the way of us accomplishing. So that was in the way. It was a challenge. We were faced with a challenge of getting to where we wanted to be in terms of keeping families in the same school. So it could be something like that, something that's in your way that you need to knock down. Some could be an opportunity, you know, an opportunity to buy a piece of property, to get a building, to I don't know, I can't even think of any others, but just something that you see out there that say, boy, that this would really, buying this building or moving this or hiring this person or building this department, for example, would be great, but we don't have the resources for it. It won't just happen naturally. We need to do something strategic and apply some effort and attention to get us there. Continuing to define what we mean by strategic, it's how you get to two things: optimal mission delivery and long-term sustainability. So again, growing and guarding, in a sense. Mission delivery, delivering on that vision, that value proposition that we've said, this is classical Christian education, and you come up with something like a portrait of a graduate, some end goals, and then you say, how do we get there? What are the things that need to happen to get us to optimal mission delivery? And then what are the things we need to do to make sure we're in business 10, 15, 25 years from now? Sustainability. So that's that guarding kind of activity. They can be initiatives, they can be projects, and even specific action. Again, it's generally either growing generative activity or guarding fiduciary activity, not just incremental growth. And obviously, it's not operational in nature. So crafting the strategic plan, the first thing I would say is when you sit down to do a strategic plan, you have to know why you're doing it. So why are you writing a strategic plan? I think there's four or five things. Direction. You want clear direction. As a head, I want clear direction. I don't want to just move forward and lead in ambiguity. I want to agree with the board on the things that will get us to a better place or a stronger place. And if we're thinking on the fiduciary level, especially financially, so direction, alignment, strategic plan should provide inspiration and motivation because it ought to be big. It ought to be bigger than you can actually see. If you can accomplish, if you find yourself consistently achieving all the things on your strategic plan pretty easily, even ahead of time, you probably weren't thinking big enough. So there ought to be some aspirational parts of it that tell your families, that cause a bit of a wow factor in your family. Really? We're going to do that? So it can be defining, it can be directional, it can be aligning, inspirational. It's also a key for measurement and evaluation and accountability, honestly. Not that you're only successful if you hit everything, but a well-defined plan with key measurements along the way and what it means to be successful holds everybody accountable, and we'll talk more about that later. So understanding why you're doing strategic planning. So if you're sitting down with your board and you say we need a strategic plan because everybody says we ought to have one, spend some time in saying, what are we hoping to get out of this? Not the specific outcomes yet, but the process itself. What are we hoping for? Is an important conversation. So have that conversation and then determine your timing. There's not a right answer, and there's not even a right answer for framework. I'll give you a couple of examples. But for our school, we've settled in on 5-year cycles. And what happens, you start your new strategic plan at the end of your fourth year, so that by the time you finish your fifth year, you have your new plan in place. So we're in the process right now. Our plan is just finishing, our last five-year plan. Actually, we did a four-year plan because we were moving to a new property and there was so much that needed to happen, we thought four was the right answer. And next year, the one we're doing now is actually going to be a six-year plan. But I think in that 4 to 6 year range, just decide what it's going to be and know before the end of that, start your planning process is sometimes 6 to 12 months before your last one runs out. But 4 to 6 years is recommended. 3 years is, I think, too short. Getting beyond six gets problematic. So determine the timing. For us, part of it, we're actually kind of having a six-month overlap, and publicly our plan, our six-year plan, will start in January of 2019 because it nicely takes us to 2025. So we have this Vision 2025. It's our 25th anniversary, and so it's actually for some marketing and kind of optics reasons that we chose the six-year plan. It gives us a little bit, we have some ambitious goals, so it gives us a little bit more time on a couple of projects. But you've got to figure out for your school and your situation, you know, what the right timing is. So determine your goals, determine your timing, determine your leadership. So again, this is one of those things that's no right answer. And by leadership, I mean a couple of things. Who is the facilitator of the process? You can go internal, you can go external. There are advantages both ways. If you don't have a lot of confidence from someone, I like strategic planning, but I don't facilitate my own. It doesn't make sense. So we have brought in external people, and we've used internal people that had that skill set to be the facilitator. So who is the point person, the facilitator, internal or external? And then outside the facilitator, who are the main people driving it? It can't be just one, and it can't be a whole board. So I think you need some subset, some task force, some smaller subset of 3 to 5 people that meet more regularly that keep the strategic planning process going. That make sense? And by the way, we're going to leave a lot of time for answers at the end of this that can get very practical because I'm going through a lot quickly. And if along the way something isn't clear, you can interrupt me in the middle as well, but we'll definitely have a good time for interaction at the end. So determining your leadership. So right now, my board chair, myself, and two other members of our board are our task force, and we have this iterative process we have in place. And then the third part of leadership, well, it really gets into your frame, beyond leadership, what framework, and what I mean by framework is who else do you involve and when? Again, there's no right answers, but decide and think about what you're doing. So, for example, when I arrived at Veritas years ago, we were 200 students. We had just struggled to get into that 8th to 9th grade with a few students. We had lead classes that were very small. We were not in a facility that we wanted to stay in. And it was this critical time in the life of the school where we knew what happened next was big. And so we went very broad with key stakeholder groups and big open meetings because we felt like we needed a lot of conversation and a lot of buy-in. 5 years later, when we did our last plan, we felt like we were in a very different place. We'd gotten to high levels of retention. The family surveys were very high, a lot of confidence, a lot of trust, and we went with a much leaner, nimbler team. We didn't feel like we needed to create a lot of buy-in. We had a lot of trust and buy-in, and we wanted to move faster. So what we did is we took our strategic plan to the 80% level and then floated it out with 4 stakeholder groups, donors, student group, parent group, a faculty and staff group, and we said, this is where we're going, and it was 80% done, but are we missing something obvious? Sometimes you need to not be 80% done before you meet with those key stakeholder groups, and you've got to figure that out, and a lot of it has to do with how confident are they in the current direction and an accomplishment of the vision and mission. Does that make sense? So you want different key groups like that to be involved, and for the among your stakeholders, the word to be out there, oh yeah, I was in a small group that participated in that among your faculty and staff. Yes, I got to speak into that. You don't want to leave any stakeholder group out, but how much you actually need them in a current planning process depends on where you are as a school. So you may have questions about what some of those indicators might be, and we can talk about that. So that's what I mean by deciding the right framework. There's timing and framework in leadership. There's not a right answer. So I'm not very formulaic in terms of timing, leadership, and framework. But make sure you have competent people that can think strategically, and that you're getting buy-in, you're getting the appropriate and needed buy-in for where, what stage of growth you're in. So the first four there, I probably should have these on two different slides. The first four are about kind of setting it up. Who's leading it? Who's facilitating it? What's our timing going to be? And when do we involve different stakeholder groups? That's the setup, okay? The next step is when you're actually in the room talking about the right outcomes. Like, what are the things that are going to be, that you're going to capture on your plan? Like starting an academic support program, buying a campus, adding an admission, a development office, an officer, if you're at the stage where funding is at its next level, or you're about to do a capital campaign. So identifying the right outcomes is an important part of the process. There are three things I would say in that along that lines. Some of those are going to be obvious. Like, they're going to hit you in the face. Well, we run out of space. In 2 years, we need a building. And that's going to be pretty obvious. And if you don't have money, you're going to need a capital campaign. So you've got your two right there before you even have to look around. So some of them are obvious. Another good tip is, before we start a strategic planning process, I always go out there among the network of classical Christian schools and look at a bunch of plans. And they don't actually have to be done well, because you can, no matter how they're done, you can kind of see the ideas and what they're going after. I'm not looking for a model. I'm looking for ideas of things that we might should be thinking about that we're not. So those are two steps. And then lastly, you want to resource the ISM stability markers. How many of you are familiar with the ISM stability markers? Okay, about a third to half. So these ISM and its research has developed this list of stability markers that in their research, as they've identified schools that have got to a point of maturity and stability and success over a long period of time, measured by a number of different indicators of health, they've identified these major markers of stability. Now, you don't need to write any of these down, but I think some of them will make sense to you. All of this we can provide. Any of the stuff that starts to get too technical, or when I start talking about what the actual plan looks like on paper, we'll give you examples of that. I think we download them or upload them into some place that you can download them from the conference. If not, I'll give you my email address and I can get them to you. One of them has to do with faculty culture. We administer a faculty culture survey twice a year, and one of the markers has to do with that. One of the markers has to do with how well you do your board training in education. One has to do with how the board functions, board leadership. Another one has to do with faculty professional development. ISM has identified that schools that tend to be healthy and stable over the long term spend at least X of their annual operating budget on professional development. So you start getting points when you spend 1% of your budget on professional development, and I think you max out on the stability. So these stability markers have a grading system. And when it's very depressing when you're a brand new school and you do a stability marker grade. Like, I'm getting zeros on things because we don't have this and we don't have that. That's okay. It gives you a baseline and you can start growing from it. So one of our first things in our strategic plan that we identified, okay, we're spending about a quarter or half of a percent annually of our budget on professional development. And so we set a goal to get to 1.5%, and that's about where we are today. We spend about 1.5% of our budget on faculty professional development. Donor cultivation is another stability marker. How your development office is organized and runs, faculty comp and benefits, Cash reserves is another one. So that can become a you can look at, hey, where are we in cash reserves? The old numbers before the last recession said you need to be at 8 to 10%. The new numbers are saying you need to be 16 to 20% of budget in cash reserves. Okay, if you as a board, you have to decide, do we believe that? Do we care? What number do we want to be at in terms of cash reserves? And how do we get there? And so you start uncovering so many of the important things that are going to determine the cost of your school or the amount of funding you're going to need to secure, which may influence other strategic decisions like a development office. There's stability markers that have to do with executive leadership. They've identified 16 characters and characteristics of a head of school that meet certain criteria in terms of leadership and confidence and stability of the school and health of the school. And so I've gotten to where I just did it last month, but every 2 years I send out to my faculty and staff this survey on myself on these 16 marks or characteristics of a head of school. And so we got a baseline on me years ago when I first did it, and we look at that and say, okay, is there anything that we need to put in our plan in terms of my own development? And so sometimes, you know, in the strategic plan, professional development or improving executive leadership can be a part of it. Things like hard income coverage, facilities, enrollment demand versus supply, those are some stability markers. And what you need to do as a board is just, if you're starting the strategic planning process, you need to at least look at that list, read those articles, look at those tools and say, do any of these make sense for us? You may say no, but there's probably some things in there that you're going to identify. I can see where that really is a marker of a healthy school, and we need some attention to it, and then you've identified something to put in your strategic plan. Does that make sense? So I'm thinking for how you think, I'm kind of painting a picture of how you sit down and think about in the world of things we could put in a strategic plan. So you come up with a pretty good list, actually, much longer than you can accomplish. So this is when it has a brainstorming nature. Maybe a number of these things come off the stability markers, or there are a number of things that seem obvious, or there's some things you've seen other schools doing that are interesting to you. And in the working group, you really work through a list and then start calling it down. There's no science for doing that. I've done everything from you have a list of 20 things and you have everybody in the room, the whole board at this time, maybe even some stakeholders, start prioritizing 1 to 2, what everybody cares about. And you start to try to find some common priorities and objectives in that process. So that's what I mean by identifying the right outcomes. What are the things that actually end up on your list? Okay. The way that I advocate a strategic plan, I think strategic plans come in two forms, and I think they need to come in both. One is the operational tool that the board and the head are looking at. I like it on one Excel sheet, and I'll describe it, and then I'll make a copy available to you. It's not a marketing tool. It's a leadership tool. A lot of strategic plans, if you go out and especially if they're readily available, you can tell they have a more marketing bent, which is fine too. I think you need to take this tool, put it in the hands of communication and marketing people, and say, how do we turn that into something that is really visionary and attractive? And our last one, it was really hard because our last strategic plan was all about money and buildings, which is not very inspirational. And so we had to come up with a way that we talked about money and buildings in a way that was more visionary than if you were just looking at our grow cash reserves, buy two buildings, you know, very practical, pragmatic, boring stuff. Raise money, which scares people. How do we talk about it different than just raising money, buying buildings, and growing our cash reserves so that we're securing our future? That's not a new playground. That's not an athletic field. That's not some of the other things that could be more compelling in a public kind of way. So I think there's an internal and external part of your plan, but we're not going to talk much about the external part. I'm talking about developing the tool that you use to operate off of to do these few important things we're going to talk about in just a minute. So let's say you identify, for the simple, five things over the next 5 years, 5 to 10 things. Say let's pick seven. You have these seven things. One might be to build an academic support program, or at least to pilot one. That was in our plan, was not to do it, but to explore it and pilot it, and then make a decision. So it might be something like that. It might be hiring a development officer. Why is that a strategic plan? Because it's something you're adding to really grow the school, and it's going to take resources to do it, and you got to have a plan for it. So that something like that would be in the plan. So you come up with your list of seven to ten things or five things, whatever you think is appropriate. And the first thing is you do is say, is this objective something the board? So I have an Excel column with drop-down menus, and it says either board or administration. Board, you know, it's either going to the head or going to the board. So you come up with those activities. Then you assign a cost to it. You need to do the hard work of saying, what will this cost and when? And then next to that column is where are those funds coming from? Are we going to fund it out of operations, which means what? Raising tuition, right? Or are we going to fund it out of a capital campaign? For a lot of us, or an annual fund. For a lot of us, those are the most of us don't have endowments to where you can say, oh, I'll use the endowment for that project. So how are you going to pay for it? What's it cost and how are you going to pay for it? Very few strategic plans that I see really have a financial price listed on there. What's it really going to cost and when, and how are we paying for it? That's why they end up being kind of pie in the sky, list of things we'd love to do, and they'll probably happen if a surprise donor comes through or something. So that's not the situation. You want a strategic plan that you've not only assigned to the right group of people, the head and his team or the board, attributing a cost to each item as well as a source of funding. And then the internal versus the external version. The internal is the operational, the leadership one. The external is your marketing piece. So now you have this plan. You've got this list of your key priorities. You've assigned it to the board or the head. You've come up with the cost. You've identified, left out one thing on that chart. It lists whatever number of period of years you have. You have those columns on that Excel spreadsheet. What's happening in year one? What's happening in year two? What's happening in year three, four, five, etc. And then when does the cost come in? Is it something you need the cost up front, or is it something that actually won't cost us money for 2 or 3 years? So you see that across. And then you have a final column at the end for notes, you know, that can capture any additional information. So you have that tool. So that in itself can be great. What if you just create it and it sits there? So what you need to do is create a way in the cycle of your leadership in the leadership of your school where you have to resource it. So the two biggest things are the annual head agenda and the annual board agenda. So that these two things should be paramount for every school, that the head of school has an annual agenda that they've agreed upon with the board on that lists the 3 to 4 strategic things that I am charged with accomplishing this year as a school, as a head of the school. And it may mean I'm directly doing it, but either me or my team. These are the 3, 4, 5 things strategically that we're doing this year. And the board will hold me accountable to it, whether it's directly me or if it's something that my athletic director is actually doing or the head of my academic support team. It's me or my team. But don't go into any year. It's the best thing that I have ever, and I started doing an annual agenda probably 2 years before I left my old school. But what the key thing, the great thing about having a head of school annual agenda and agreeing on that in May or June, early July at the latest, going into the next year, and setting up either, we meet quarterly with the head support and evaluation committee, the subset of the board that is supporting me and holding me accountable. We meet, and once a quarter, we look at my annual agenda, and so there's never any surprises at my end of the year evaluation. I know because of my third quarter meeting where I what I accomplished on my agenda, and the board disciplines itself to only focusing on that annual agenda. It can't just, you know, board members can't talk about what they heard from this parent that they didn't like that I did. That doesn't come into play. It's not permissible. It's really only one of two things: that annual agenda that we wrote that I'm accountable to, or anything that's immoral, unethical, illegal, or so imprudent that it's obvious to everybody. Like, yeah, I don't know. There are a few things, thick practices in schools that the board can get upset that you deal with that aren't illegal, unethical, or immoral, but they feel like they are. So they're that important. So I put that in the category of imprudent. So certainly they can, but they're just not looking at the Superman job description of a head of school and thinking of everything that they think you could have or should have been doing. It's just not fair. So you end up with clear marching orders for the year, and most of your annual agenda is driven by the first thing that you do is you resource the strategic plan. So I'm in that process now. The board and I are going back and forth on my next year's annual agenda. So we say, let's pull out the strategic plan. That's what we have to do first. What on this strategic plan are we supposed to accomplish over the next period of time, and what of those things need to come into play this year for me or my team? So the annual head agenda. At the same time, so that creates great clarity and support for the head. Like, I know what my charge is. I know what I'm being held accountable to. I know how to report against it when I meet with my committee every quarter. Some of you have head support and evaluation committees monthly. Some of you don't have them. I would encourage you to learn about it and have them. It's the subset of people that you can't involve your whole board if you run board meetings well, and head of school report just can't go on for hours. You have to have a smaller group of people that you're talking more intimately with about how things are going. And so that's that head support and evaluation committee. That's the committee that holds me accountable to that annual agenda. As important is the annual board agenda. So this is the best tool for keeping boards productive and focused and having board meetings run well. Is you look at that strategic plan. I want to hit the head annual agenda one more time. The first place you look is the strategic plan. The second thing you do is just look up back over the past year and say, is there something obvious that's not necessarily on the strategic plan that we've learned or that's happened that I need to give attention to? Maybe your lower school head left. This wasn't on your strategic plan because you didn't know they were leaving, but now on my annual agenda, securing a qualified, competent leader from a lower school ended up being on mine last year because we had an opening. So you look at your strategic plan, you look back at the past year and say, is there anything obvious that I need to be attending to as the head? Those are the main two things that I think inform an annual agenda, or just something you see on the horizon that's a new opportunity that wasn't present when you wrote your strategic plan. So those are the three places I look, and I go back and forth. I take the first stab at mine. I serve on some head support and evaluations for other schools. I did one this past week for a school, and the board took the first shot because it was a younger head. They wanted to give more direction first, and then the head responded. I don't think it matters, but you have a little bit of back and forth, and you end up with this list of things you agree on. So that's the head agenda. The board agenda is a little bit different because it's not one person, it's a group of people, but you still look at that strategic plan and say, okay, what does the board need to do next year in light of this plan? And then you assign it to what committee on the board should take this up. And I think I won't get into committee structures. That's another talk I'd love to give, but I'm an advocate of just 3 to 4 standing committees. But say you come up with something and it's not obviously a financial committee project. It's not obviously a committee on trustees project. It's not obviously a head support and evaluation committee. Those are our standing committees. Maybe it's some real estate acquisition or something that you want the board to take the leadership on. That's when you might form an ad hoc committee. Hey, we're going to form a real estate ad hoc committee for the next 3 years to go do this thing. It exists, so you give it a charge, you give it a commission, you give it an outcome, and a reporting system. When you create it, you create a one-pager charge to get that thing done. And it might go to a current committee, or it might go to, but it can't just go to the board. So the other column is if you assign something to the board, in our column, it has each of my board members' names, and the next thing I do is pick who it is. And it's generally the chair of a committee, either a standing committee or an ad hoc committee. What happens is then you look at those things that you've decided the board's doing this year. Generally, a board's not going to do more than two or three significant strategic things in a given year. You assign them to a committee and to the person who's really responsible. And then you look at your board calendar for the year and you start building your board agenda for every meeting for the whole year. So in July, by July next month, my board agenda for every board meeting will be 98% full. And that's what our board year is. And we don't end up talking about a lot of, it creates so much focus and discipline. And by having that direction and those objectives, people are having to show up and talk about what, you know, those committees are reporting against their progress. And so you're all talking, it's keeping the board's conversation about on strategic, long-term strategic things that are growing or either growing or guarding the school, not about what's happening in the second grade classroom, because that's not the board's job. But the board is just going, you're going to have parents on your board, they're going to have that natural default to want to talk about this, how this hire go, or what athletic team should come next, or when are we adding this program in the high school. It's just, they're going to go there. And you want to get ahead of them and be informing them on all of those things so that they don't feel like they're not in the know. But you want to keep them busy with strategic, important, long-term objectives. Does that make sense? So that's the annual board agenda and the annual head agenda. The third thing that it feeds in, and so the board agenda, what that does is helps fill your board calendar, your committee charges, and your board meeting, and then you organize your board meetings around reporting against those big things, and so you don't have just lots of downtime to chase rabbits or to bring in something that's not on the agenda. The discipline, board members can't, if it's not on the agenda, it can't come up in a board meeting. If they think something outside of those things needs to come up, they have to appeal to the chair to put something on the committee, on the agenda for the meeting. So it keeps that board meeting really tight and disciplined. The second thing it does is it begins to inform the real cost of operating your school. So the things that you decide to do, if you decided it's going to be sourced operationally, then you have to plug that into a financial forecast. I have a good idea what my tuition is 7 years from now because we have all of that plugged in. Assuming my enrollment numbers are right, and projections are right, which is done very conservatively, but I've got a history of doing that. So assuming my enrollment numbers are right, I kind of know what our tuition will be because I plugged in the strategic things that we're doing. Those are key. They're not the only key financial things to plug into your picture, but they're big ones. And frequently where we get stuck is we want to do this thing, but we didn't put it in the budget, either the operational budget or the capital budget. So you uncover some real expenses and you make peace with the real cost of running a school ahead of time, and you put that into a longer term projection. And so what I'm trying to help schools avoid is sitting around in November, December, January and say, how much do you think we can raise tuition? What do you think parents can stand? And then you come up with a number and say, okay, what do we do with that? Versus this is what it costs to run our school. This is what we need tuition to be to accomplish this. And then if you say, oh, that leads us to a tuition that's too high, then there are a couple of options. You can say, okay, well, we'd like to do that strategically, but we're not. But you can't have it both ways. Or you think about other solutions like raising tuition, but enhancing your development office so that you grow your tuition assistance fund, and you can support more families that can't afford the tuition hike. But you're dealing with facts and real cost in a very responsible manner of stewardship. So it informs your potentially your operational budget or your capital budget, depending on how you're funding a certain thing. Like if we bought a building and we're renovating it for, you know, $4 or $5 million. Well, I'm not putting that in my operations budget, but I will have increased utilities and other things that come along with it that I've got to plug in. But we needed a capital campaign to do this, and so my number one strategic objective on my annual agenda for the last 3 years has been this capital campaign, because that's how it has to happen. So using the strategic plan, this is what the things I just talked about for the board, for the head, and for financial, and for informing the operational and capital budget. So I think of it like this. The strategic plan informs the board agenda, which sets committee assignments, board calendar, board meetings, et cetera. Head agenda goes to the head support and evaluation committee. We create my agenda. And then the other thing is, after we create my agenda, then that's when I go meet with my team. And I say, this is what I'm charged with. So we've got to figure out among us who's doing what to accomplish this. It won't be all that we do, but it'll be central to what we do. And then we come up with a financial plan where the cost of the strategic plans are built into our 7-year forecast on the operational and capital side. I'll quickly go through some of the benefits, which are pretty apparent and straightforward, and then we can start talking about going into Q&A session. I think it increases confidence at every level that you're doing the right things. You got greater organizational clarity. Patrick Lencioni, 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, or his book, The Advantage, talks about just trust and organizational clarity being two of the biggest, you know, most important things in a healthy organization. Organizational clarity between the head and the board is just critical. And this helps you get there. Healthier accountability and evaluation for the head of school. It's a much healthier way for me to go through my year with confidence, knowing I'm going to be evaluated against the right things that we've agreed upon, that there's not going to be any surprises. Board, as I said before, board organization focus and productivity, sound financial forecasting, clarity for stakeholders. All right, so, okay, 1 or 2 questions? Yes, sir.
We follow Carver
Model. He's still got to find the what?
But.
Yeah. Well, as you look at the end goals, you look at those end goals, and there's some that you have extreme confidence that this is in his wheelhouse, this is what he or she's focused on. But you look at those end goals, and you might identify this is what the spot that we're concerned about, and that's something that can get plugged into an annual agenda. So I just connect them. All right, that was the only question. David cut me off. So you're welcome, David. I'm around all week, so if you want to stop and ask me questions individually, it's fine. That's part of why I want to be here. I want to help you in any way I can. So thank you.